Welcome back to the show. Just after 7 o'clock into hour number two, Big Show in the Morning is live from the Sportsnet 960 downtown studio on your Friday morning. Game day for the Calgary Stampeders in the nation's capital to face the Red Blacks. 5:30 kickoff. Calgary hoping to bounce back after back-to-back losses to the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. He's Matt Rose. My name is Will Nault. More coming up later in the show with Jonathan Huberdeau's massive extension with the Calgary Flames. But right now, we continue the CFL conversation and focus in on the Stampeders and Red Blacks tonight. Also reflect on what we saw last night in Montreal. We say good morning to Three Down Nation's Justin Dunk, the CFL insider. Saw a clip of you on Tim and Sid looking real cool with your shades and your AirPods. What's going on, pal?
Man, you know why that happened? I was ready to go in studio with them on Thursday. They had to shuffle some things around. I guess there was some big trade to the MLB trade deadline that weren't as big as the CFL. And they're like, can you come on Friday? And I said, well, I'll come on, but I got to come on from the cottage. So there you have it. I went on from Tobermory, beautiful lake here on my dude, just chilling and relaxing on Tim.
It looks unreal. I see a hammock over your right shoulder. I see your nephews over your left shoulder.
Where's the palomas?
It's good living. Yeah, was there a paloma out of off camera, or what's going on here?
There might have been a few flowing boys.
I love it. Absolutely love it. And I guess just on that topic, I see, you know, certainly a topic that was brought on in that conversation with Tim and friends last week. Just for our audience, Justin, we've asked you about him a lot this season. Chris Streveler is right on that verge. I mean, we're probably not going to see him in the CFL anytime soon because he's right there in terms of NFL pension and what that could mean for him post-playing career.
Some good service out in the cottage.
Oh, rough. He's in cottage
country.
You're
going to have to dial that one back up, GVP.
I don't know if he's in cottage. JD, you there?
Am I back now?
There we are. Yeah. We didn't hear a second of that answer, so we'll just pretend like it didn't cut out. Chris Streveler, go.
So Streveler is six games away from getting his NFL pension secured, which is one accrued season in the NFL. That's the critical aspect for him right now, and it's the reason why he's just focused on the NFL, because he knows if he comes back to the CFL, that NFL teams are going to stop viewing him as a potential NFL quarterback. Now, we should say it is an uphill battle for him to make the roster with the New York Jets because they have Zach Wilson, Joe Flacco, and Mike White, who created a little bit of White mania, I feel like, in New York when Wilson was out last year in his rookie season. So it's going to be tricky for him to make the Jets roster, but the critical aspect here is that Streveler's going to get reps in preseason games with Gangrene, which will give him fresh film if he doesn't make the Jets roster, which I do think is a long shot, to potentially go and sign with another NFL team to get those six games that he needs.
And those are just six games dressed, right?
That's it. As long as he's on the 53-man roster on game day dressed, he just needs six of those more.
That's quite the pursuit, and certainly wish him all the best. It's not going to be easy, but I can understand why he is very heavy in that pursuit. We were talking last segment just jokingly, and I know it was a big talking point on social media yesterday. Are you an air horn guy, JD?
No, I've never been. I get that the fans like air horn guys.
I think Maddie's okay with it. He's fine.
Yeah, I don't know. I saw it was bothering a lot of people yesterday. I didn't really notice it too much.
Somebody take that guy's horn!
I don't know. ambient noise. It's not like it was the Vuvuzelas a few years back at the World Cup. It wasn't the worst thing. It could be worse. I've seen worse.
I think the issue is, fellas, is that it maybe confuses the players with the whistle being blown or not, like with the play being blown in. But, I mean, you're a pro athlete. You got to deal with those kinds of things. And I get it. There's going to be noise when you go on the road, although sometimes it's close, right? And you hear something that's loud. It might not sound like a whistle, but you hear that. And as an athlete, you're like, I got to go because I'm used to the whistle being blown, you know?
Yeah. No, for sure. Speaking of which, I know that it's been same thing, kind of a conversation or a story all year long. You didn't necessarily, quote-unquote, guarantee it, but you know, Gary Stern's not afraid to make a little noise on social media, and Montreal ultimately loses the game, but he was right in a sense. It was competitive until the fourth quarter where Montreal runs into some more bad discipline and really Winnipeg kind of took things over in that fourth quarter.
The score was tight, but in reality, the two playing in their third different time zone in 5 days. I guess I mean playing football because they were in Calgary, they went to Winnipeg for a couple of days, they were in Montreal. Zach Laris doesn't turn the football over like that very regularly, so I feel like that's why the slow start with the interception and the fumble. So in my because of the Blue Bombers not playing up to their capabilities, that's the only reason why this was a close game. And I understand Gary Stern's the owner, he's going to believe in his team. But when you put that stuff on social media, that's a guaranteed win. That's just enough juice for a team that's in a prime letdown spot to go up there and say, "All right, bleep you. We're going to come in and beat you guys. I don't care what you think of us."
Ooh, your connection's so hit and miss, but we're gonna try and stick through it. But yeah, I'm with you. I understand what Gary Stern's doing. I don't have a problem with it necessarily, but yeah, go ahead, Matt.
I just wanted to ask really about the Montreal offense because, like you mentioned, JD, it's not very often that Zach Caleros throws three picks and fumbles the ball, and you get four turnovers. You got to make him pay. You only get 3 points, but. My question is more overall with the offense in Montreal. Is this just lacking William Standback, or is there deeper issues here with the offense in Montreal?
That's a great question, man. Honestly, I think the offensive line needs to play a little bit better, but I don't think you can all say that, well, if William Standback comes back, it's going to be all safe, so to speak. He's definitely a game changer. He's arguably the best running back in the league right now in terms of production. I mean, Andrew Harris has had a great season as well, so I think he would be in that conversation. Kadeem Carey, I think, could be too. But just what Standback means to that offense, I think he's the MVP of that offense in a sense where Harris probably is in Toronto, and Carey, you know, you can make an argument whether he is or not with Calgary because they have guys like Bowie by Mitchell there. So I think getting Standback back would help, but you have a veteran quarterback in Trevor Harris. I think he's been getting a decent amount of time. Just doesn't seem like he's quite in rhythm with these receivers. We're not seeing the explosive plays down the field from Eugene Lewis or Jake Winicky. We're not seeing him find the end zone with regularity like he did last year when Vernon Adams Jr. was throwing him the rock. So I think a couple of issues have to be offensive line needs to play a little bit better. But they've run the ball all right with Jeshrun Antwi, the University of Calgary graduate in the backfield, filling in for Standback. But honestly, I think Harris needs to play better. He needs to get rid of the ball quicker and needs to protect the ball better. And as you said, when they get those short fields, especially against the Blue Bombers, two-time defending Grey Cup champions, you got to come up with touchdowns. There's got to be a way to make that happen. They went for it on third down there early in the game. Didn't get it. It was really close. Lewis caught the ball and came down the back end zone, but both feet were at the back. But they got to capitalize on those opportunities.
Yeah, four turnovers, that's potential for 28 points, and you walk away with three? It's just not good enough. A thought on what we're seeing from Brady Oliveira the last couple games. Man, he's been running well.
He's coming into his own. I think the real key there is he's gotten into a rhythm with that offensive line. I think a lot of times we think, well, you just stick another running back there, and the guy can go and he'll be fine. And, you know, we do see that, I guess, from time to time in the NFL, but I think the CFL game with a wider field and just even being used to that role from Oliveira's perspective takes some getting used to. So I think he's gotten in rhythm with the offensive line, and that's why we're seeing him run the rock better. And that is, for my money, still the best offensive line in the league. So there was holes there, I think, early in the season, but it seemed like Oliveira just wasn't quite on the same wavelength with the way that the offensive line was moving. It needs to be well orchestrated, and it seems like it is right now.
Justin Dunk is our guest here, our CFL Insider with Three Down Nation, joining us on Big Show in the Morning. Tonight, it's Calgary and Ottawa to face the Red Blacks. And JD, I think every week when you have a bunch of guys missing at practice, you kind of hold your breath when the depth chart gets released. You don't exactly know what it's going to look like. And boy, this is a Calgary team with not the best news. You've got two really key players in McEwen and Roberson now in the sixth game. Kadeem Carey on the one game. This is a much different looking Stampeder team tonight in the nation's capital.
It really is, man. You consider Dave Dickinson's not going to be there, the head coach. So you'd imagine Mark Killam's going to take over that role. And Calgary's going to have to deal with going on the road in the East, which is tricky for those West Division teams. And got one out here if they're going to get back on the right track against Ottawa.
What have you seen? I know that you're playing a team like Winnipeg, who right now is the best team by a mile, back-to-back Grey Cup champions, perfect through nine games. So Calgary necessarily shouldn't be coming in with their heads hanging low when we know they're going to be desperate to get back in the win column against this Ottawa team who's 1-6, but are slightly better than what their record has shown. What have you seen from Calgary? Because really that home game against Winnipeg, they were right there, and the defensive backfield fell victim to Caleros being lights out in the latter half of the fourth quarter. What have you seen from Calgary in these last two losses here?
I don't think they've necessarily all been on Calgary, if that makes sense. Like, I still think the Stampeders are, for me, the second best. Ryan's might be part of it's more of a mess. You're going up against the two-time defending Grey Cup champions. And Winnipeg and Calgary both knew how important those games were going to be in terms of the last. So I think it just came up straight.
Just had to drop the call. It was stuck with it. It got better there when you were interviewing him. As soon as I ask him questions, it blows up.
Yeah, it's like, you know, whenever I'm doing phone interviews, like, I cannot stand still. Like, I pace, like, really bad. So I'm lucky because my apartment is, like, 700 square feet. So when I'm pacing, like, you're pretty much getting the same signal. But if you're out in cottage country, like, is he going around the lake? Is he going around the house?
Sounds like he's driving.
Is he going into a cave? Is he driving along the side of the lake?
He's on Bluetooth driving, it sounds like.
With the windows down.
No, I don't think the windows are down.
Cruising through.
I think he's probably. Crisp Ontario. You can just put him right on.
Crisp Ontario, forest air,
wind through his hair.
We got
him back. Yeah, he's driving his convertible right now. I'm not sure what exactly he's doing, but we've got him back. JD, what's going on?
Do you boys hear me?
Yeah, you're good. Your connection was, you know, hit or miss there. Maddie was asking questions. It was great. You felt like you were back. Now, not so much.
Went around a curve.
Yeah, it's all good. It sounds like you are driving. Is that what's happening right now?
Yeah, you know what's going on? I'm actually driving from rural Guelph to Toronto through some of the back roads. But, guys, usually the connection is strong. Like, Rogers needs to get this figured out on your end, okay?
Oh, what an absolute beating.
Careful. Careful.
I mean, I feel like maybe you could afford a better cell phone, but I don't know. It's, you know, it's fine.
Yeah, he had to.
With Rogers.
He had to front for the convertible, man. Yeah. You throw him a bone here.
I think he can afford both. Let's talk about, you know, just in terms of, I guess, final thoughts on this one tonight, Matt, because the Stampeders are a beat-up team.
It's the Ottawa Redblacks that I'm kind of wondering about as well. Caleb Evans, what have you seen from him? He seems to be a guy who's also coming into his own right now. And what are kind of the problems that could be caused for the Stampeders in this game against Ottawa? One win, but they still got some things to be proud of.
Yeah, one win, but the record belies how good this Red Blacks team is, all right? All of their losses came by one possession, except for a game in Saskatchewan where they lost, I believe it was by 15 points to the Rough Riders, and the Garrett Marino fiasco happened and sort of overtook that whole storyline at the end of the game with that shot on Jeremiah Masoli. So Ottawa is not as bad as their record would indicate. They've played some highly competitive football and just haven't come up with big plays in clutch times of the game. But that's what Caleb Evans did last week against Toronto. Late in the ball game, hits Jalen Acklin for a big touchdown strike that really sealed that one. And I like what I've seen from Evans so far this season. I think the Ottawa Redblacks should stick with them for the rest of the year. See what happens with Jeremiah Masoli's health in the offseason and decide on the position at quarterback in the future. Because this guy, he clearly has this capability, and I like what he does in terms of throwing the football down the field. I think there's some fundamental things he could correct a little bit. He has a ball pat that he really likes to do, and I think if he held the ball a little higher, you know, I wonder if Paul Appelese could help him with that. It would quicken up his release. I think that would make him even better. But overall, you got to like what you've seen from the guy. Arm strength, he's started to make better reads and protect the ball better. And he's got that escapability and burst in the open field as well. So that'll be a dynamic athlete for the Stamps to have to deal with. You know, Sean Lemon's chased around a bunch of quarterbacks in this league, so I'm sure he can probably go and get him down. Mikey Rose knows what he's doing as well. But this guy's slippery.
Poor Arbuckle. Hey, he's just never going to get on the field. It's fine. Sorry, Nick.
I mean, you got to earn it at some point, though, guys. Like, I understand, like, oh, woe is me and poor Nick Arbuckle, but he's been with multiple teams for a reason, guys. Yeah. Like, there will be people in the league that will say, what, you know, Arbuckle's going to be the next Kevin Glenn, but as a backup, right? Because he's been with so many teams over the last few years.
Yeah. It's been a tough ride for him. What do you make of the other two games we're going to see on Saturday? We got Hamilton, Toronto, the Eastern Division lead.
And I'm guessing with you driving to Toronto, you're going to be at BMO tomorrow?
There's a possibility, fellas. We'll see what happens.
And then Brian Burnham returns as well as the Lions host the Elks. What are you looking forward to in these two contests?
Yeah, I think that this Tiger-Cats-Argos game is a big potential momentum changer in the East Division. I think Hamilton really knows it. I know the Argos staff has bared down this week after that loss to the Redblacks that was embarrassing. There was a sense that they felt like they were going to walk in there and get a win and continue to sail in first place in the East Division. But now it's a totally different ballgame. You got the Tiger Cats coming in there. The Hamilton fans will travel well down the QEW. It should be, I don't want to say a great atmosphere, but a decent atmosphere because of the Ticats fans going to BMO Field. You know, the one thing that's interesting to me, guys, is you watch the Argos games when they're at home on TV, and it's always a super tight shot because they don't want to see the stands. So I always just think that's funny because they're not very full. As for the Lions and the Elks game, I think a lot of people think Edmonton's going to walk in there and get whooped again, but this Elks team is showing signs of coming around under Chris Jones. And people around the league, as much as some of them might not like them, are honest about it. They feel like there's talent there. Taylor Cornelius, Cornflake, my guy as I call him, has played a little bit better, has protected the football better, and Kenny Lawler has balled out, I think, living up to that contract, especially with the revolving door that he's had to deal with the quarterback already this season. And they're getting stingier on defense. So I don't necessarily see Nathan Rourke, as much as I love my guy, the Canadian quarterback, hanging another 50-burger on Jones' defense. I think it'll be a more competitive game there when the Elks go to BC plays.
A lot of talk about Nathan Rourke, and look, we should love the Canadian quarterback doing great things in the Canadian league, but already people are talking about, you know, maybe go out and see this guy because he might be south of the border in a couple of years. Just in general, I know Matt's talked about this as well. He doesn't necessarily beat any really good teams, but what do you make of that narrative that's starting to build a little bit when it comes to Nathan Rourke?
It's a legit narrative, and I was talking to some people on both sides of the border after his first couple games, and Rourke had at least drawn the attention of NFL scouts and personnel men as a quarterback because of the way that he started the season. Like, take away the Canadian designation for a second. There were people in the league talking about that they had never seen a quarterback start the season the way that Rourke did ever in the history of the league. Now, I think that's a bit of recency bias, to be quite honest, but guys, you got to remember, he could be gone after this year because now NFL option windows are in every single CFL contract. So if he throws for, I think he's on pace to throw for 48 touchdowns and rush for 12. So if he produces 60 total touchdowns, especially with some of the trash quarterback play in the NFL, I'd have a hard time thinking that he doesn't get a look. And I believe he's only 24 years old. So the NFL is probably sitting there, you know, thinking, hey, we can get a guy that's quickly developed here, who's still in his mid-20s and could potentially help us as a dual-threat guy. So I think, yeah, if you want to see him on a CFL field, you need to get out there this season because he could be gone. And, yeah, you know, he did go through, some people would say, I don't know, a bit of a dip, I guess, because he was starting to throw some interceptions. But when you play these upper-tier teams like the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, they're going to have guys like Willie Jefferson, Jackson Jeffco coming at you in a veteran secondary and back seven, I should say, that knows what they're doing. So those turnovers are going to come because the windows are smaller. But I think his most impressive performance of the season came last week against Saskatchewan at Mosaic Stadium. We all know what the atmosphere is like there. They're down 17-4, and he helps lead the Lions to roll off 28 unanswered points. Like, that's the stuff that NFL scouts want to see. How does he deal with adversity? Because at some point, whether it's the CFL or the NFL, you're going to get smacked in the face, and it's how you deal with it. And he's shown this season that he's been able to bounce back and make plays time and time again in those situations.
Yeah, and that's the thing for me when it comes to Rourke is the fact that he's 24. And we're not talking about a guy who's 29, 28 here. This is a guy who, you know, NFL teams would be salivating at the chance of getting, at least in their building and in their room, because at that age, you can still go south of the border and play quarterback for a decade.
You can. And, guys, I mean, not to compare guys or take a shot at Chris Streveler, but Rourke is a much more well-rounded quarterback right now than Chris Streveler ever was in the CFL, and Streveler's 6 games away from getting his pension. So let's use that comparison. Now, a lot of the times what will happen is it comes down to politics and who the agent knows and if there's some connections with a team there that could get him a favorable opportunity. But just view that on its own. Rourke against Streveler when he was in the CFL. I think Streveler threw 17 touchdowns and 17 picks. Yeah, he was a great rusher and more athletic in terms of testing numbers. But as a pure quarterback, there's no doubt Rourke is well ahead of where Streveler was in the CFL and maybe even where Streveler is now.
And I guess finally, Saskatchewan's on a bye this week, but a lot of conversation about their quarterback, Fajardo. I'm curious where you are on that. Like, I know that Saskatchewan wants to win. I know that Fajardo wants to be out there every week. There's been questions about his career. Is it smart for the Riders to come out of this bye and rest him in Edmonton, knowing the crossover is very much alive? Like, where are you at on Fajardo and his health and kind of where things stand through 8 games?
It's too late to rest him now, in my mind. You have to go into Edmonton with the best guys on the field. I think the time to rest him, honestly, Willie, would have been that stretch there after he took the shot from Sean Oakman in Wolfville at Touchdown Atlantic. He didn't play the next week against the Argos, but he obviously did play against the BC Lions, didn't take a shot where he felt like he suffered a major setback like he said after the Touchdown Atlantic game, but still, I think that was the time, right? He didn't play against the Argos anyways because he was in COVID protocol. They shouldn't have played him against BC because I think BC's kind of running away from them in terms of being able to be competitive unless the Riders roll off a bunch of wins here in what I'll call, I guess, their second half of the season, 10 games remaining. So I think the time has passed. You got to go into Edmonton because the Elks are getting better with your best people, and you just got to hope that somehow, some way, Fajardo's damage to MCL holds up for the rest of the season, because if he's sidelined, that Riders team has zero chance of being in the Grey Cup game in Regina in November.
Great stuff, man. Your connection was lights out to finish off the conversation. So maybe Rogers fixed things with the outage. I'm not sure exactly what happened, but lights out. Enjoy your weekend in TO, and thanks for jumping on, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Look at that. We just speak it into existence. Rogers heard us, and then we're good to go, boys.
Like, you know, if we don't fix this, guys, they're going to keep trashing us. So
the most reliable network out there, JD.
Yeah. 5G, baby, 5G.
Most reliable network across the country.
Just ask him. Just ask
him. Honestly, on the farm, as an aside, I know you got to go, but on the farm, it is way better than the competitor that I won't even name yet. That's why I've had Rogers for years. So props to Rogers.
I like that. And you can name him. It's okay. You can name him. We can just put him right in the... As Matt called it earlier, what did you call it? The swirly water thing? Is that what you called it?
Yeah, the swirly water thing. Yeah, the toilet.
The swirly water thing. I like that. You can make my jeez. Well, this could go right off the rails, so we better say goodbye now. See you, pal. Take care.
Have a good weekend, boys.
There he is, Justin Dunk, CFL insider with 3 Down Nation, joining us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, which is always reliable for a great wheel. Check him out tonight. 14-time Consumer Choice Award winner. 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast, open for dine-in. And for takeout and delivery, just give him a call. 403-248-3344.
Either or. Gonna go there? Have a pie? Want to watch a game? Excellent. Great place to watch the Stamps. Stay at home?
Excellent.
Great place to watch the Stamps.
Text line, so they might have 1,000 fans in Toronto. Oh, boy.
Oh, right in the teeth. Geez. Oh, jeez. Come on. You gotta be like that.
They've averaged more than 1,000 this year.
I have no idea what they're averaging.
I don't think it's great. But
I
think it's
a lot
more
of
than
division games because they've been not good.
No.
Really bad, frankly.
I don't know how to test out what the attendance averages are, but you must have access to that on the old media site, no? Yeah,
something like that.
Fine. 2022 season. Do this on the air. Oh, there it is. Attendance. Doesn't see about team summary.
I don't have it here.
Here it is. Toronto average in 2022, 10,866. Lowest in the league by a mile, but it's over 10,000.
Capacity for them is?
Well, their percentage of capacity in terms of 10,000 people being in the stands, 47.7% for for Toronto home games.
Yep.
So less than 50.
So about, yeah, because they have.
But you want to talk about percentage. Don't have the lowest percentage of capacity in the league.
They don't?
No. The Edmonton Elks do, because that stadium is massive.
Yeah, it's huge.
22,286 averaging in Edmonton, which is 40% of capacity.
They're doubling the average attendance. And
yet lower in capacity.
The building's far too big. It's meant for Olympics and World Cup stuff that will never go there.
No.
No, they got the sad part.
Vancouver last minute, like, yeah, we'll host World Cup games.
Yeah, they're like, whoa, no, come on.
Edmonton's like, man, we were right there. We were right there.
Man, when are we going to use the top section of this building again?
And to nobody's surprise, Winnipeg, Saskatchewan, the team's averaging north of 26,000.
Those crowds at IJ Field are
legit, man.
Nasty.
80% capacity in Winnipeg this season.
That's a good one. That's really good.
86% in Hamilton and Ottawa, though. It's pretty good.
That is so. Well, they got a good atmosphere there. They've made the CFL cool in Ottawa, which is
well. They've done a nice job around. They've done a nice job around the stadium.
Yes,
restaurants and condos and the whole nine yards. Now the team needs to be a little better.
Yeah, that's the only problem. But it's the CFL. Ebbs and flows.
0-3 at home this year are the Red Blacks. We'll see if they can go to 1-3 or drop to 0-4 tonight, as they host the Calgary Stampeders. Kickoff goes at 5:30. We'll take a break, come back with more on Hour 2. He's Matt, I'm Will. Garrett's here as well.
Hi, JVP.
This is Sportsnet 960 The Fan. I do like how much you've been singing.
Dude, someone tweeted at me and said that they love my singing, so we'll keep it going.
Forgot to ask Justin Dunk. I just see it over your shoulder here.
What's that?
Kahari Jones wore a headset last week, despite not being a coach, and it's being monitored now by the league. Interesting.
Yeah, so...
That's a great question, man.
That's so good.
Thanks, GVP.
Could be referring to anybody, though. There's no evidence it was your question.
I wasn't being serious that we needed to clip that and save it forever, but...
I took that seriously.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
That was a
just
big
got
moment.
Just got my ear like, hey, clip that. I'm like, all
that
right.
That was a big moment for me.
Clip it.
JD saying it was a good question.
What were you going to say, though? You were going to jump on the Kahari Jones thing? I don't know.
Well, it's in relation to this salary cap that they have on coaches, because apparently he's an operations consultant, which isn't under the cap.
Right.
So if you want to actually do stuff that's coaching in game, then you need to be on the under the cap, but. Yeah, he could also, I don't know, it seems very CFL-y.
He's Matt Rose, my name is Will Nault. We're well into hour number two of Big Show in the Morning on this Friday. It's August 5th, 2022. A little bit chilly in Calgary this morning, a little bit nippy.
Yeah, Shaw Charity Classic.
I believe it's only, let's see here. Yeah,
getting
only,
underway
only 11
in a few
degrees
hours.
Right now. I see courtesy our friend Chris Dornan. Check out this pairing at 11:30 at the Shaw Charity Classic. Mike
Some
Weir
of them are
and Fred Couples.
Couples had a hole-in-one yesterday at the Pro-Am.
No way.
Yeah, he did. His seventh of his career.
Sorry, Benny. Wasn't with you. Just had to get rid of that Hebert guy, and he was able to get a hole-in-one.
What an interview that was.
Oh, so good. If you missed it from yesterday, it's an hour number four. Ben Hebert joined us to begin hour four. Really could have spent the whole hour with him, but
yep.
He's got more other things to do, more important things to do than chat with us donkeys. But yeah, it was really good to chat with him, catch up with him. Pretty cool for him to play alongside Fred Couples in the Pro-Am.
One of his favorites.
Yeah, it was good. I don't quite understand what's going on here with this one texture is going on, quite a rant, and I don't really follow it. Of course, yesterday, you might have saw the news. Jonathan Huberdeau signing an 8-year extension with the Calgary Flames worth $10.5 million per season, $84 million total. Text comes in, says, holy Huberdeau. Wow, who could imagine? Third text. Getting rid of the most hated person in Calgary and bringing back the most loved player in Calgary history. Don't understand what that means. Does not seem fair, question mark. Maybe Panthers still feel guilty over the Sam Bennett fleecing in all caps. not really sure what's going on there.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the opinion is on that one. it's all over there. The map.
Yeah, it's excitement.
I guarantee you there's an opinion there, though. Listen, excitement. Jonathan Huberdeau, 8 years, 10.5 per. I think it's pretty fair to say that this was one of the... This seemed to be one of the offers that had been reportedly offered to Johnny Gaudreau before he turned the Flames down.
Yeah, not sure if the salary structure and bonuses were the same.
Yeah.
In terms of the money, yes.
But obviously, with the Flames doing this with Jonathan Huberdeau, they probably would have been willing to do some sort of signing bonus structure for Johnny Gaudreau, too. And frankly, there's not a lot of players of this caliber that hit the open market and aren't in a position to ask for things such as that. So... Jonathan Huberdeau stays. I think that both you and I had the feeling that if one player was going to sign ahead of the other, it was most likely going to be Mackenzie Weegar. But Brad Treliving goes out to Montreal, what was it, earlier in the week. I want to say very early.
I think
early.
It was Sunday night.
Sunday night or Monday.
I believe so, yeah.
Goes out to Montreal, meets Jonathan Huberdeau. You have a face-to-face dinner. Hey, how do you do? Get to know you type of thing. I believe it was Alan Walsh who actually had tweeted that out, got picked up by some insiders as well. And then here we are, just a matter of days later, they put pen to paper on this contract. It's not the first time that the Flames have signed someone who to a long-term deal that has not yet played a game in a Flames uniform. You think of Noah Hanifin and Elias Lindholm as well, who are in similar boats after the Dougie Hamilton trade. Obviously not the same caliber. They didn't get $10.5 million per year. But this is a massive deal. I think that, you know, it's been a bit of a roller coaster emotionally for a lot of Flames fans. You lose two key players that were outstanding in a massive portion of how the Flames were able to win the Pacific Division last year, get to the second round of the playoffs, and they leave, and it's hard to swallow. But the trade goes through. I think a lot of people liked it at the time, but the kind of asterisk was... You have to make sure that you get one or both of these players signed for the value to actually be there. And now that Huberdeau is signed for 10.5 for the next 8 years, yes, it's more than Matthew Tkachuk is going to get annually, but this is a guy who more consistently has been a point-per-game player in his career. And I think that this is one of those signings you just had to do if you're the Flames. He's an elite player in the league. He's an elite offensive player. He's a 100-point type of player. And he's going to be a big part of your team for the foreseeable future now.
Yeah, I think the back half, the reality is, and this usually happens when you sign a big term deal at the age of 30, which is when this contract will kick in. Of course, he's got 1 year left on his current deal. He's 29. He'll turn 30 next June. So when this contract begins, he'll be 30. It'll take him to his age 38 season. I think the reality is, and everybody probably knows this at this point, is he's not going to be as effective in the back half of the contract, and you might not love what that dollar figure is. But the other part of that, too, that I don't think we've given enough love to, and it's not a certainty, it's not a guarantee, we don't even really know what that number is going to be. But the thought is that the salary cap will grow exponentially in the next half decade. So by the time you get to the latter half of that deal, 10.5 might look okay. You know, you think about where we are right now in the NHL with the amount of players making over $10 million, where, you know, 5-6 years ago, it was only a handful. Now it's, you know, multiple. You know, that's multiplied by 4 or 5 since...
It's a conversation we had about point-per-game players versus 100-point-per-game players, right? It's just the natural order of things. And, you know, you just hope that he ages more like Joe Pavelski and Patrick Kane have, where they've continued to be effective offensive players, maybe not MVP caliber players like they were in their prime, but at the same time, effective players that can play in a team's top six all the way through their contract. You hope that it's something more along the lines of that and not along the lines of something like Tyler Seguin.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Seguin thing is unique because injuries played a massive part in kind of the decline in the level of play that we've seen from number 91 in Dallas. And Jonathan Huberdeau, for the most part, has been pretty healthy for his time in Florida.
Right.
It's really what a lot of this comes to. Like, if you can go through 8 years and all eight of them, you don't have any major injury setbacks. Like, every once in a while, you're missing a couple games here and there, that type of thing. You can work through that. But it's when you have the major, the very, the surgeries that are aggressive, you know, hip replacements, stuff like that, your ACLs and MCLs, knees, those type of things. If you can avoid that, players like Jonathan Huberto have the potential to age gracefully. Yes, at the back half of that year, you're probably going to say 10 and a half.
I was going to say,
even if
he ages gracefully, it's still going to be a lot of money for a player who's 36, 37, 38, 100%.
Patrick Kane, $10.5 million for Jonathan Toews is a lot. $10.5 million for Patrick Kane is a lot. And those guys signed those deals when they were 25.
Right.
And they're in the last part of it now, and they're 33.
Last year.
Right? Now, the other thing, too, is, you know, with sports science aggressively getting better, we're seeing athletes play longer into their careers because you've got, you know, better nutrition, better training techniques, better recovery from injury just because the medical field has advanced to that extent as well. Like, you think about the artificial disc replacement surgery that we've seen, what, two or three times in the NHL now. Tyler Johnson had it. Obviously, Jack Eichel, and I believe there's a third player who might be doing it as well. But even that is such an advancement in medicine that is going to have a massive impact for players that can extend their career and play longer. So, yes, at the end, you're probably not going to love it, but that's like 6 years from now. I think for the first 3, 4, 5 years, Flames fans are going to love watching number 10 zip up and down the ice and try and bring a little bit of success to this market here in Calgary.
Well, and I think just you're feeling way better about the deal now than you were when the trade happened. Because I think even when the trade happened, the most optimistic Flame fan was like, okay, I don't know about their chances of signing him long-term or signing both these players long-term. There's no guarantee that Uyghur signs long-term. But as I said earlier in the show, in hour one, I think with the signing of Huberto, it probably makes things a little bit easier to sign a guy like Uyghur long-term. Probably makes him more comfortable signing long-term. I don't know if that also gets done in the offseason. But yeah, I think already not knowing what the production looks like in that 8-year contract for both Tkachuk and Huberto, I think you feel better about the trade today than you did when the trade happened. No question.
And another little wrinkle to this, but it's a small one. Jacob Pelletier is a French-born player, you know, born in Quebec City, played in the QMJHL. Jonathan Huberto, born in Quebec. I'm probably going to get this wrong, Saint-Germain, which is about 3 hours, I want to say, west and north of Quebec. And to have another French-speaking, French-born superstar player in the organization playing the left wing, if you want to even draw another similarity, as Jacob Pelletier kind of comes up in the organization and having someone that he can kind of be comfortable with, maybe speak a little bit of French with. We talk about the Swedes and how, you know, even they take their time to speak Swedish amongst each other. There's a little bit of comfortability there, and I think that that could be another little added benefit, just having him around for a player like Jacob Pelletier as he continues to kind of ascend to the NHL and becoming an impact player for the Flames organization, because they drafted him to be an impact player. He has shown in the AHL as a rookie that he can be. Right now, if you look at the roster, I would argue that there's a hole that kind of fits him quite well on the third line there that I could envision him taking if the Flames don't go out and make another move to change up their forward group at all. So I kind of like the fact that Huberto will be able to be that guy for Jacob Pelletier too.
Very curious to see what Pelletier's camp looks like and where he might slide in on this team. Their cap situation probably leads you to believe there's a spot to be won if you're Pelletier.
Oh, big time.
But they're also not going to hand it to him.
But who else is there to take that job right now? Because you got Huberto, you got Mangiapane, you got Backlund, you got Coleman, you got Lindholm, and you got Toffoli. There's your top six. After that, Milan Lucic, Trevor Lewis, Kevin Rooney, there's your bottom line. That leaves Dylan Dubé, Jacob Pelletier, Adam Rzeczka, Sean Monahan as kind of the four players I would look at as options for the third line. I don't know if you look at the AHL roster and you say any of these guys are ready to jump and be that effective player. Like, I don't know if I would almost guarantee that you would rather have Jacob Pelce up there than a Walker Doerr or something along those lines. So unless the Flames do make a move, I very much believe that there's going to be a spot for Pelce to go out and try and battle for this season.
And as I say, he's got to earn it. He's not going to be given that spot, especially knowing who the head coach is.
No, you have to be able to be effective, and you have to be able to check, and you have to be able to do all that type of stuff.
And in a lot of ways, that was kind of the position Rozicka was in last year. Like, people thought that he was going to be in a prime position to make the team. He came into camp and disappointed hard and did not have a very good training camp and was sent to the Stockton Heat rather quickly. Now, obviously, as the year went on and you get to, you know, the middle of the winter, he was recalled and proved to be a very productive player with the Flames. But that was a hard lesson for Rozicka. And I think, you know, listening to some of the comments made by Brad Pascal with the boys earlier this week on Sportsnet Today, Pelce is very understanding of what he needs to do. He knows it's not going to be given to him. I think last year training camp was a pretty big eye-opener for Pelce to say, okay, this pro game is a lot different than what I've ever, you know, gone through in my life. First little bit, even in Stockton, was tough for him. But once he got his feet under him and played a handful of games, he really took off and never looked back. So I think with Daryl Sutter as your coach, you don't necessarily have time to sit there and figure it out. You've got to come to camp ready to perform. And I think Pelce will do that. But that being said, it's not necessarily a guarantee. And I've said this all along, too. You don't want Pelce playing 8-9 minutes on your fourth line. If he's going to make this team, it's in a middle six role.
I think a third line spot would be perfect.
So we'll wait and see what happens.
Because, you know, the Flames are also one of those groups that, yes, the top players will usually skate, 19 to 21 minutes, I would say. It's not like some teams, like the Oilers, who will trot out McDavid and Draisaitl for 23, 24-plus minutes a night during the course of the regular season. It's a little bit more spread out amongst the Flames, but if you're looking at a guy who you're asking to come in and give you 13 strong minutes of even strength ice time a night, you know, I don't see him really being in a ton of penalty kill situations in his first year as a rookie, but I could certainly see a situation where he evolves into that player in the NHL. I just think they've got some other options right now as well. So maybe he would do it out of necessity in a certain certain instance, but I don't know if that would be something that they ask him to do right away. But I don't know. I keep talking myself into him at least getting a shot here to start the season. And I think the addition of Jonathan Huberdeau is going to be something cool to see alongside Pelce. And maybe a little bit of a extra motivation for the young man who was drafted 26th overall back in 2019 and is now 21 years old. Should probably take another break because we do have to get to the guest that I thought was going to be earlier, but it was actually later. Switch it up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Call an audible. Tim Leaper is going to join us. Really enjoyed our conversation last time. Former first base coach for the Toronto Blue Jays. And for us, Jays analyst. Big win yesterday. Deadline happened. We've barely talked about that since it happened. We'll get into all that next. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.